This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Who's on and who's off the short list for what is arguably the most powerful economic policy position in America? From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio from the BBC studios in London this week. President Trump has reportedly soured on his top economic advisor, Gary Cohn, and may not, after all, nominate him to become the new Federal Reserve chairman early next year. This according to the Wall Street Journal. Marketplace's Sabri Benishor has been following the Fed leadership story. Sabri, what are we hearing?
Well, Gary Cohn made the mistake, according to the Journal, of criticizing the president's comments after violent clashes in Charlottesville. You'll remember the president seemed to offer moral equivalence between Nazi white supremacists and counter-protesters. So now Cohn appears to be out of the running for the Fed chair. Who might the president pick instead? There's a long list of names, including the current Fed chair, Janet Yellen. A new president almost always keeps the incoming Fed chair for the sake of stability and minimizing political influence over the Fed, but it's anyone's guess what President Trump decides to do. The president has a huge opportunity now to shape the Fed. This week, Vice Chair Stanley Fischer said he's stepping down. So out of the seven governors on the Fed's board, there are four upcoming vacancies. And how the president fills them will determine not just monetary policy, but a whole array of bank regulatory policy, too.
Sabria, New York, thank you very much. Let's check the markets. The 100-share index down the street here is up 0.4%. Stock index futures for the U.S. are mixed at the moment. The Dow is up 9 points. The S&P future is pretty flat. The dollar is down. The euro is up at $1.88. We're all focused on the human cost of these hurricanes and economic reverberations as well. If Hurricane Irma ends up doing violence to Florida, add the costs of Harvey and its floods, and citrus, vegetable, and cotton markets are being knocked around. Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports.
Texas is the top cotton-producing state, and some growers on the coastal strip who were expecting a bumper crop instead got Harvey. Russell Painting is president of the Texas Farm Bureau.
They were looking at probably a 2 million bale cotton crop, and there are estimates out there of close to a quarter of that being either totally lost or extensively damaged.
He says it's a small chunk of overall U.S. production, but with cotton prices in the dumps, it could put some farmers out of business. Cotton specialist Guy Collins at North Carolina State University fears Hurricane Irma could harm other southern farmers' crops and finances.
If it hits us on the East Coast, depending on severity, it could be devastating.
And crop insurance may not make farmers whole. Lisa Lockridge with the Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association says citrus and vegetable growers are also worrying about Irma. But
if there's any silver lining, it's that it's coming early in the season.
She says most growers can still replant if need be. I'm Annie Baxter from Marketplace.
There's a lot of hand-wringing here in London right now about a possible brain drain, whether or not Britain's current negotiations to leave the European Union descend into further rancor. Other parts of the EU are super happy to have business move their way. Listen to Kieran Donoghue, head of International Financial Services at Ireland's Industrial Development Authority, as he pointed out that Dublin is just an hour by plane from here.
I think one of Ireland's attractions for a lot of groups is actually our proximity to London. London is going to remain a major marketplace in its own right, a major financial centre. And one of the attractions of Dublin is being able to retain those personal connections to the marketplace in London, those functional linkages to that part of the corporation that's going to remain in London.
Companies might move, and there's London's talent. Most are, after all, free agents. Here's Karim Morgan-Nedi. For 6 years, he's lived in London as an executive at Herman, a global firm that does leadership consulting and cognitive testing.
When London stops being the center of Europe for business purposes, it actually in some respects, removes a constraint from us as to where we'll be.
All right. Well, let me see. Could I interest you in Frankfurt, Germany?
Probably less interesting than other places.
All right, other places. Dublin, Ireland. Always nice, Dublin.
Dublin's a lovely city. Again, I'm not sure we'd get quite the stimulation that we need. My wife's a fashion designer, and so I think there's a minimum level of cultural, I don't know, je ne sais quoi that she'd require.
Wait, je ne sais quoi, that's a clue. So maybe Paris.
Paris is definitely on the list. But actually, as you kind of broaden the scope around Europe, cities like Lisbon and Barcelona are also very high on the list.
Lisbon, Portugal, and Barcelona in Catalonia in Spain. Well, you couldn't go wrong there. But let's talk about this for real. I understand the concern that you would have to leave. But do you think as we move forward, there is a possibility that enough business moves away that you would have to adapt?
Yes, I think there is. I mean, you're already seeing enough uncertainty in terms of the decision making that people are sort of holding off on making big investment decisions, which is very different from what we're seeing in a lot of our other markets around the world. From what I gather from my friends in Paris and elsewhere, the EU governments are certainly considering ways of sort of dangling carrots or at least carrying big sticks to make the decision a lot easier for businesses that may want to move elsewhere.
So, I mean, just essentially doing due diligence as a family with you and your spouse. You're like, okay, we don't know if this happens, but we need to start thinking.
Absolutely.
Is it an organized process? Do you have like
a
Pinterest-style scrapbook?
My wife does the Pinteresting. I'm more of an experiential type of guy, so my proposal is that we actually go spend a month in Lisbon, Barcelona, but we are actively considering kind of using the Airbnb option and just testing out a few places.
Karim Morgan-Netty lives in the Notting Hill section of London. Mr. Netty, thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
And how would you like to have the second campus for that vast retail and media empire known as Amazon situated out by you? There's news this morning that while Amazon will stay in Seattle, Amazon's looking for a second parallel HQ somewhere in North America to house perhaps 50,000 Amazon employees. I want to be the first to nominate my hometown of Waterville, Maine, but I'm sure others are about to raise their hands. In London, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.